you, Your Honor, and may it please this Court. Terrence Flynn on behalf of Norman Perez. The District Court's entry of summary judgment was in error, and it was an error on both direct evidence and indirect evidence principles. With regard to the direct evidence involved in this case, I would cite the Court, as we did in the briefs, to paragraph 14 of record 62, which sums up what Donald Koziel, Ms. Perez's immediate supervisor, said to her before she actually had the job. And that was that he didn't like to work with women. They were always a problem. Their schedules were problematic because of kids and other reasons. She then immediately tells Mr. Darlington, the next level, of this circumstance. He says, Norma, if you don't take this transfer, you have no job. In other words, Mr. Darlington, while he may not have spoken the words of discrimination, he bought lock, stock, and barrel and discrimination, Mr. Koziel's words. He says, as shown again at record 62, paragraph 14, he looked at Donald and he said, you work with a schedule, you put her down the days you need to, what has to be done at the store. But he says to Norma, like I told you, you either stay here or you're not with the corporation anymore. Well, that's a heck of a first day at work. That leads then to almost a year later when she is terminated. The direct evidence is that, according to Ms. Perez, who is to be credited on summary judgment, that she and Koziel agreed that they would mark down candy for sale, candy that was being taken out of the store and to be put in inventory. Koziel denies that, but in any event, Perez says that that's precisely what happened. Then there's an investigation about Perez marking down that candy. Now, again, I think the briefs are pretty clear about this. There was nothing surreptitious about what Ms. Perez did. She knew, admitted by the defendant, of all the various surveillance techniques that Thornton's use, such as both that it shows up on a register when, in fact, she does a price override, that it, in fact, is videotaped. She knew all this. Nothing surreptitious about what she did. She and Koziel agreed that there be a price markdown, and for this, she gets fired. Okay. Now, why is the original conversation important? Because it taints Darlington. As I said, he bought...
It taints Koziel, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. But Koziel didn't fire her.
But under your theory, Koziel lied when Darlington investigated.
Absolutely. No question about it. And it taints Darlington's view. In other words, the honest belief point, I don't think, is available to Thornton's, given what happened here. So that's basically the direct evidence, Your Honors. Of course, under Lucas, the same evidence can be offered on indirect. There's one apology, probably more than one, but one I'll make, apology to this Court. I did not, with regard to the question of who's the decision maker, you may have seen in the briefs that I say it's a chain of command here. And I understand that the Ellis case and Your Honor's case of Coleman have some questions about whether it absolutely has to be the same decision maker or whether or not there is it becomes weaker. Okay. But be that as it may, in this case, at record 60, tab E, which I did not put before the court, but it's on defendant's own summary judgment submissions. It's the deposition of Lori Roberts, who's their HR person, who says at page 81 of her deposition, to my question, who is the ultimate decision maker with regard to? If one person is the ultimate decision maker with regard to termination, who is that? There's an objection that's interposed. I say Ms. Perez specifically. The witness, Lori Roberts, the HR person, says it is not a one-person decision. Again, on page 81. Question, is it a consensus decision among the people you just mentioned? It is. Answer. Question, and that would be Mr. Darlington, Picone, and you, and Ms. Stackhouse. Answer, yes. Well, this goes, of course, to the indirect evidence question on the comparator. The defendant makes a spirited argument that because supposedly Picone made the decision about Koziel on the liquor question, that and Darlington made the decision on Perez on the candy question, that therefore there's no appropriate comparator. Now, I did argue that that Coleman would seem to say that that is not the sine qua non of a comparator review. But be that as it may, the admission of the HR person that it is in fact a chain of command decision tells us that Picone on Koziel with regard to the liquor point and Perez and Perez's problem with the candy by Darlington are the same chain of command. Therefore, that spirited argument, well made, simply is not supported by the facts of their own witnesses. Similarly, they make the argument that, you know, Ogden Nash once said, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. And actually, it's the reverse here. The liquor in this case, which is a higher priced product, should have been, I think, a bigger problem. They make the point, oh, well, he was coming back. He was giving it back for the shortage. Norman Perez was trying to get money for the corporation by selling the product that was going to be shelved.
Well, under the employer's theory, though, there was an actual loss incurred in her transaction that was unauthorized, and there was no loss, at least that Koziel was able to cover the loss out of his own pocket.
That is their theory, Your Honor. I know I'm eating my time, but this is an important point. In December of the same year, this same candy is sold for 25 cents. This is, I think, paragraph 26 of again, record 62. 25 cents in December. Well, their loss then was 10 cents. 10 cents a package. Nor do we have any kind of work rule problem here. They have this auditor's thing, but no one ever relied on it. No one knew about it.
Okay. You want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. For Thornton's, Mr. Shoup.
May it please the Court, Dublin Scope on behalf of Defendant Thornton's. Your Honors, there was a single, what I would say, two dispositive material issues of fact in this case before the District Court, and they remain dispositive before Your Honors today. First and foremost, I'll just directly address what Mr. Flynn just addressed now. I'll just do it in a backward issue. First of all, this is a copy of the November sales planner that was in effect in November 2009 when Ms. Perez was discharged. And just so we're clear, in November 2009 and November 2008, it was not Ms. Perez's first day on the job. She had worked there since November of 2005. She was hired by Bill Darlington. She was promoted by Bill Darlington. And Bill Darlington was the individual who ultimately decided to discharge her. The reason why Darlington decided to discharge her was based on another fact that is not disputed. In November of 2009, the Nestle-branded candy bars, which Ms. Perez bought, which is captured on video surveillance footage, which she does not dispute, were priced for $2.22 for two candy bars. She, captured again on video surveillance tape, performed manual price overrides to purchase each of those candy bars for 15 cents each. What happened ultimately later in the month of December of 2009, where it's undisputed that those candy bars were to be sold at 25 cents in December, that's undisputed. But that's immaterial because those candy bars in November, when she did her price override, were supposed to be purchased for $2.22 for every two candy bars.
Would you agree that for purposes of summary judgment, we need to assume that Koziol gave her permission for that markdown and then lied to Darlington about having done so?
Even to answer your question, yes or no, the answer is yes. You can assume that you can, even if Koziol, as Ms. Perez claims, gave her permission, what she cannot do, Your Honor, going to my next point, is this, is deny the existence of this, the write-off policy, which was in full effect.
Did anybody ever rely on that in the decision-making? I was looking for that in the evidence.
It's inferred from the simple fact, Your Honor, that when articulated basis for the discharge in a personal action form, which is a preprinted form, which is in the record, has different categories of choices to check off in the boxes. There's a specific box for failure to control cash inventory or cash or inventory. Because Ms. Perez did this what I call the self-help manual price override, she blew past the $25 maximum write-off under the policy and therefore failed to control inventory and failed to control
Is it your theory that it didn't matter to Darlington whether Koziol had given her permission?
No, that's not the issue, because it would matter to Darlington for one specific point. If Mr. Koziol had in fact known about it and had agreed to it, per Mr. Darlington's deposition testimony, is that had Mr. Koziol been involved, then Mr. Koziol would have been shown the door the same way that Ms. Perez had been shown.
Well, Roberts testified that termination was not automatic on write-offs, right?
Excuse me?
Roberts testified that termination was not automatic on unauthorized write-offs, correct?
That's correct. That is correct.
So there was some judgment and discretion involved in the decision that was made.
That's
here.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And we've got Darlington, Roberts, Picone, all involved in the decisions for both Koziol and Perez, correct?
That's a characterization by Mr. Flynn.
Well, Darlington testified that he was involved in the Koziol coaching situation, correct?
He was present for the, yes, he did. He was present for the Koziol coaching situation.
Darlington testified that he was informed of the Perez situation, correct?
Can you repeat the question?
Testified that he was informed of the Perez situation.
No, he did not. Picone never testified at all, Your Honor. There's no deposition testimony from Mr. Picone.
But what about Roberts' testimony?
What Ms. Roberts testified, there were four depositions, or technically five. Darlington testified, Picone did not. It was Perez, Darlington, Koziol, and Ms. Roberts. And then Mr. Darlington sat for a second deposition, but in his capacity as a 30B6 witness. And Mr. Darlington and Ms. Roberts both consistently testified that they specifically notified their respective
Roberts testified that the decision to fire was a consensus decision involving Darlington, Picone, Roberts and Stackhouse.
Disputing that, Your Honor. My point is this, is that if the rest of the deposition transcripts, if we read the rest of them, you also hear that Mr. Darlington specifically said that he reported the situation to Mr. Picone and informed Mr. Picone of his decision to terminate Ms. Perez, which is not disputed anywhere in the record.
Wait a second.
Go ahead.
We just had... Are you trying to split the difference between making the decision and being informed of the decision?
Yes.
For Picone?
Right.
But we've got Roberts saying it was a consensus involving Picone.
That's because they didn't when she says that, Your Honor, though, the interpretation is very simple, that nobody else is disputing, hey, we're fine with your decisions. But
this
it's
sounds,
still their
sir,
decision.
Sir.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see how that's a summary judgment issue. That you can get summary judgment if your position depends on Picone not having a role in the decision to fire Perez, given that testimony that says he was part of the consensus.
But, Your Honor, it's very simple. You can do that if Mr. Picone is just agreeing with somebody else's decision. If no one is saying, presenting any evidence to him that suggests that there's an issue with this, he says, hey, Bill, it's your call. Go ahead and do it. That's fine. There is no evidence in the record presented by Ms. Perez that suggests that Mr. Picone was influenced by any type of discriminatory animus by the only alleged bad actor, Mr. Koziel. It's Mr. Darlington saying, hey, I made the decision. Mr. Picone didn't have an issue with it. It's Ms. Roberts' testimony that she reported to her superior, Ms. Brenda Stackhouse, saying, Bill and I have come to a consensus. This is how we want to proceed. And Ms. Stackhouse is, per Ms. Roberts' testimony, saying, go ahead.
In your brief, counsel, you argue the same actor inference.
Correct.
As you did just a few moments ago.
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
If I understand that correctly, the idea is that if a manager is so unbiased and fair-minded as to first hire or promote the plaintiff,
right,
then he's unlikely to have changed into a bigot a year later when firing or demoting. Is that about right?
Correct.
Now, we've said a number of times that that's not conclusive as a matter of law.
It's a rebuttable presumption. Correct.
It's a reasonable inference, right?
Correct.
Let me ask you, in light of that reasoning, about your stray remarks arguments concerning Koziel and Darlington's knowledge of them. At least we've got evidence that we have to credit on summary judgment that at least in November of 2008, Koziel was hostile to working with women and Hispanics. Is it unreasonable to infer that he was still hostile to women and Hispanics a year later?
It is unreasonable to suggest that the adverse employment action, which was the basis for this Title VII action, was the result of that hostility that was manifested a year earlier.
Back up a second.
Okay.
Is it reasonable to infer that Koziel still showed that hostility for purposes of summary judgment?
For purposes of summary judgment, can you, in reviewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Ms. Perez, can you assume that Mr. Koziel might have still harbored animus? Yes, you may.
That's reasonable. Okay. And so then the question we've got, we have to assume that he also lied with respect to whether he gave Perez permission, correct?
And yes. In fact, we even conceded that point below.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And so, Your Honor, my next point is this, very briefly. The whole issue about the comparator analysis concerning Mr. Picone and Ms. Perez, Your Honor, it just really boils down to a full retail value. Mr. Flynn made a comment about liquor being quicker and this candy. But the key issue, though, concerning the distinction between Mr. Koziel's treatment and Ms. Perez, is there's no dispute in this record. Mr. Koziel paid full retail value on his credit card for every piece of alcohol that was purchased on that day. That was a key mitigating factor which is in the personnel action forms, which are in the record, about why he was treated so differently from Ms. Perez. Ms. Perez, because of Ms. Perez's conduct, the company did suffer a monetary loss, which cannot be disputed.
What about the argument that that Koziel's actions were intended to conceal a problem, supposedly because he was going to risk further theft and hope to stop it and investigate it? While Perez was perfectly open about what she was doing, she thought she had permission.
No, and this is the whole why did it in plain sight argument that Ms. Perez had raised earlier. They both I see my time is up.
You can answer the question.
Both of the individuals did what they did in plain sight with the video surveillance cameras. The difference is that Mr. Koziel paid full retail value. Ms. Darlington didn't. That's why the company suffered a monetary loss, which is why they were treated differently.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal, Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the same actor question that you raised, of course, this court has said it's a convenient shorthand. It certainly is a rebuttable presumption, and I think it's clearly rebutted here by the direct evidence that upon her transfer, after her promotion by Darlington, but upon her transfer, she ran into a brick wall called Koziel that Darlington then bought. That's the point. With regard to the question of the monetary loss, when that candy is being removed from the shelves, it has zero value with regard to being sold to the public, because it's not to be sold to the public. It's supposed to go to inventory. All right? That's why Ms. Perez said, well, at least we can get 15 cents. Let's get something for it.
Was this out-of-date merchandise?
I don't know the answer to that question, and B, probably not, because it was sold in December, but for 25 cents, which, again, goes to the question of what's the real monetary loss here.
We had some cases on out-of-date food. So.
If there are no further questions, okay. I would request reversal of the judgment below. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.